here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Humane Podcast, your tech insider podcast on the data economy. From the physical circuit chips on your smartphone to the software powering GPT models, we live in a data-first world. Humane interviews the founders, investors, executives, and tech leaders that are creating the world that we live in for consumers and enterprises. Welcome back, listeners. Introducing Humane, the Tech Insider podcast on the data economy. From the physical circuit chips on your smartphone to the software powering GPT models, we live in a data-driven world. Humane interviews the founders, investors, executives, and leaders that are creating the world that we live in for consumers and the enterprise. And on this week's recording, we're bringing to you Paul Beyer, who's the CEO of GAI Insights. It's my delight to have you on the show today. Paul, welcome to Humane.
Thank you, David. Excited to be here.
Yeah. Now, Paul, you've had a fascinating career journey leading to your current role as the CEO of GAI Insights. Can you share with our listeners how you first became interested in AI and what led to your focus on helping enterprises navigate the generative AI landscape?
Sure, David. My professional career has been 25 years on the vendor side, venture-backed companies doing a variety of enterprise products. So I've always been on B2B sales. I spent 5 years at a company called First Fuel, which was using traditional AI to measure and detect building efficiency or inefficiency using traditional AI. So that was 5 years. We had seven PhDs and 30 software engineers and 12 subject matter experts. And that really helped me understand traditional AI. And then when ChatGPT hit in December 2 years ago, I couldn't believe it. I'm calling all the AI experts I work with, and they were blown away. And it was clear that back then it was a transformational tool. And we just started figuring out how can we do this for a business value, not just a cheat tool for kids in school.
Well, we've of course seen how it has accelerated in the last 18 months, and you and your firm have coined some terms. One of those is the concept own your own intelligence, or OUOI. Can you share with our listeners why it's becoming increasingly important for businesses in the age of generative AI?
It's a whole concept around risk management that it's been around for a while, but it's becoming more acute. As we all are well aware, or most of us are, that the big tech is increasingly a big part of the global economy. The top six vendors are bigger than all but two of the largest global economies. They're bigger than a number three, number four economy, Germany and Japan combined. And we see situations where, you know, Facebook has 3.2 billion members. That's almost double China. We've also seen a world in the last 10 or 15 years where all the metadata for our location has been strip mined basically from all the companies and citizens for profits in these companies here. And companies are realizing that there's a risk here, particularly as we move from automating routine transactions like doing a payroll to now automating cognitively advanced processes like drug discovery, stock trading, oil exploration and things like that, that really are competitively differentiators for companies.
That's beautiful. And there's other frameworks you've talked about, Paul, like the WINS framework. This is one that you introduced in the Harvard Business Review. Can you tell us more about how this is helping companies understand their exposure to AI-driven changes in cognitive work?
Absolutely, David. We think knowledge work is too broad of a concept. Everyone's a knowledge worker. My doctor who does physical surgeries and my lawyer are knowledge worker. So we've defined a set of knowledge work that's really focused around particular type of digital work. And we call it it's easy to identify it wins, W-I-N-S, words, images, numbers, and sounds. So if a large part of your work or a large part of your cost base is manipulating words, images, numbers, or sounds, you're particularly at risk for disruption or opportunity with Gen AI. And we can apply this at industry level. We've seen this, entertainment's a good example of it. We saw a 6 months real strike because of ChatGPT's impact on Wynn's work in LA, law, software development. And in other industries, you know, heavy manufacturing, process drilling, that's still going to have a very big process component that's not going to be affected by Gen AI. So the Wynn's framework is a 2x2, allows companies to figure out urgency in company, industry, and job level. And the ones that are in the crucible, that's the ones that have high digitization, high Wynn's work as part of their component, and it's already digitized, they have real risk of 10% revenue impact in the next 2 years. And those are the companies that are need to pay attention if they aren't already.
Now, how do you see the landscape of AI adoption differing between industries like the ones you just named, Paul, that are in the crucible versus those holding a lever in your Wynn's framework?
Yeah, it's a good question. We actually see more consistency around just people. So we have now spoken with hundreds of companies, executives, and briefings, and trained thousands of people. And the bell curve that we see from companies to teams to people ends up being pretty similar now. 5 to 10% are heat seeker, early adopter, autodidactics. Boy, they're on in. There's another 20-30% that are skeptical, pride themselves on being slow adopters, very pragmatic, risk averse. And then the middle ones are really trying to figure out what to do. And if you like that profile, and it's a team or person, and you're not in the crucible, you're not in one of these categories where it's very, you're doing okay. But if you're like that and you're a make your living by doing SEO optimization, or you make your living by writing a blog post, or you make your living by being a software development, and you are being complacent, you are really putting your future livelihood at risk. So that's the bigger profiles, less of a adoption by industry, more of adoption by these three kind of adoption frameworks, mental frameworks, if you will.
That's great. And Paul, you've also mentioned in your work the concept cognitive guilds. Would you elaborate on what these are and why they need to be particularly cautious about sharing data and processes with large tech vendors?
Yeah, it's a great question. Recall some of our history when we had kind of pre-Henry Ford, where everything was kind of manual and you had people putting together the actual parts of a car or horse-drawn carriages and things like that. And then automation came in, and that kind of manual guild knowledge went from the individual worker into processes. So instead of every worker needing to know everything about building a horse buggy or a car, that went into particular knowledge, and that really helped the Industrial Revolution get forward here. So one level, the Industrial Revolution was really a transformation in information management that then allowed a transformation in production processes. That was great for some pretty straightforward, you know, how do you actually weld things onto 10,000 cars in a week here? Cognitive guilds are the next level up that's happening right now. How do we actually think about the process of drug discovery, to pick one example of here? These are PhDs who are exploring combinations of molecules that go in the millions. How do we think about that? And the good news is that these AI technologies really provide us some really big power of that. But from a business standpoint, that information is really important. And it's hard not to have it seep out of the company, even in legal ways. And one simple example of it, if I'm doing drug discovery and I'm using OpenAI or one of the closed models, I want that product roadmap to reflect my needs. But when I talk to that company and share that product roadmap, even if it's under NDA, they are starting to get bits and pieces of my uniqueness in that cognitive thing here. So we're seeing these intellectual cognitive guilds that are very human-based now are going to become more automated. And the questions for companies are, how much of that in intellectual automation do I actually need to keep, you know, behind my firewall and more under my control for competitive advantage?
100%. And if I may double click further, there's a lot of key challenges companies are facing to balance the benefits of these AI tools. What are some of them you could share with our audience that companies are thinking about, perhaps with the need to protect their proprietary knowledge and processes?
Yeah, so it's challenging being a big company. I mean, you've got a lot of existing legacy things here. I think the biggest thing we're seeing right now is getting a board and then executive team and a management team alignment on the urgency. If you don't have urgency alignment, it's really hard to actually take the next step. And after urgency, then you need to get alignment on the next project here. And then within that, you really need to start thinking through what pieces of this process can I outsource or insource? And recall, a lot of outsourcing was pure cost play. And things that we're seeing that's becoming more promising are maybe more of a hybrid model, where maybe I'm using some of the public cloud provider for my more lower transactional things or lower value things. Let's say chatbot on my website of public information. But inside my firewall or inside my trust boundary, I'm actually keeping all the data, all the process, and all the knowledge for those really strategic processes that I'm now applying AI to.
That's extremely fascinating. And there's a few other models I'd like to dive into with our audience today. One of them, you speak a lot about the concept educate, operate, transform as a model. Can you walk us through this model that you recommend for companies as they adopt AI technology?
Yeah, one of the things we believe is that companies to get value of this should not think about this as an IT project. This is an acceleration of a digital transformation project. Happens to be even more profound than a lot of traditional ones here. But that takes a while for an organization to get through. And to actually get the full benefit of that digital transformation, you need to first go through an education phase, which might be 6 to 9 months. We actually need to have executive decision makers and power centers understand that this amazing technology is not a parlor trick and is not a one-time tool, but really is a transformational element of it. And that's the E, so that's education. There's a whole set of things underneath that. And that, a lot of that has to do with viscerally learning it. You can't learn swimming by going to a YouTube video or watching a YouTube video or reading an article. Same thing, you can't see the opportunities in your company by just reading about Gen AI. Operating is when you actually really start getting in and doing projects here. And that's when you're actually picking use cases, driving down to your specific things. And the magic is once you get in production, the management team and the teams using the technology now start seeing more opportunities.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
And unlike many other technology deployments, when you deploy, let's say, SAP supply chain, that technology and that team couldn't just forklift over and then go to HR. Here with Gen AI technology, 60, 80, sometimes 90% of the team and sometimes even the data can easily be applied to other areas. So that's where the transformation comes in. And from a timeline standpoint, we're seeing about 6 to 9 months for e-education, 6 to 9 months to get in production for operation, and then another 6 to 9 months for transformation. And the transformation really comes when that transformational process is start getting into the executive comp. And that's typically over, takes 1 to 2 years. So you need to start planning in maybe year 3 or year 2.5 when you're really starting to put in Gen AI based processes that then truly backed up executive comp to really transform companies. So that's the EOT, educate, operate, and transform.
It's super fascinating. And when you think about that timeline, as you mentioned, like the pathway through generative AI, what are some practical steps companies can take to ensure they're maintaining their control over their cognitive assets while still leveraging the power of generative AI as they become more AI first or AI powered?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of basics that companies still aren't doing and experience. I mean, the first one is we need to have employee use policy. Your early Gen AI adopters need to be embraced and celebrated and fund the rebels in small ways. And that starts with a basic employee use policy that, in our view, needs to be updated ideally once a month, if not once a quarter. Having an employee use policy a year ago isn't sufficient now. And it's more than a policy. You actually need a policy. And then where do I go for questions? So if I'm one of 5,000 employees, can I use Perplexity or not at work? Can I upload a contract in it and such? That all really, though, sits under executive understanding. And just as we believe, we assert that it would be irresponsible, I might use that word, for a large company today to hire a VP who's never used a browser, I assert it's equally irresponsible for a company or an executive to opine on Gen AI investments if they haven't personally used this technology for 3 hours themselves. For even pet projects, projects at home or kids' stores, anything here. But it really is that profound technology. They got experience here. You can't understand what Japan and China is like until you go over there. And that same analogy needs to happen with the executives as they start down this path of understanding and trying to assess the transformational implications of this technology and to try to come to assertion, are we right that this needs to be more than an IT project, or should this just be taught of an IT project and have all the decisions and awareness and education pushed down and left into the IT team?
Now, putting on more of your education hat, Paul, you've been running weekly Gen AI learning labs. What are some of the most surprising or impactful insights that have come out of these sessions?
We've been doing that for a year and a half. It groups about 3,000. We get 50 to 120 each week. The major things that surprise me are the consistency of how many times people are coming back. It really is attracting. One person said at one meeting, it was Rosemary, my name is Rosemary and I'm a Gen AI addict. It really are these Gen AI enthusiasts who want to keep learning and want to validate their learning and learning from others in a voice-to-voice or a video-based way. So that's first and foremost. Second thing I continue to see out there, and about half the group is technical and half the group is business, is how much interest there is on both sides being in the same room. The technical people continue to tell me, yes, I know AI or I'm a data scientist, but I know one area really, really deep. I'm very interested in what the business people are seeing in other use cases. And the business people saying, boy, I'm not a technologist, and I really like to understand what they're seeing in terms of capability here. So this marriage, you will, of understanding kind of what and how, the business need and technical capability collectively in a very fast-changing environment right now is something that's been surprisingly exciting for learners and surprisingly continually needed because it's changing so much. They say, we're going to move this every other week and no one wants to because it's changing so much on a weekly basis. And it's a model that we encourage all companies to start coming up with themselves to find some way to get learning teams, some aspect of their center of excellence is a learning oriented.
100%. I'm a big fan of continuous learning and reskilling and upskilling. And leaning into this topic further, Paul, can you tell us about the AI Blueprint for MA initiative and its goals for attracting and retaining AI talent in the state of Massachusetts?
Certainly. I'm in Boston, and this was a town that I've been here for 25, 30 years. And I had always assumed there was a pretty tight public-private partnership. So when I was getting involved last year in AI, David, I was saying, where's all these public-private partnership meetings? I want to go support them, where the MIT is talking to the governor. And everyone's like, what are you talking about, Paul? I said, yeah, those public-private partnership meetings. And it turns out none of that existed. And many things that we need to be we aspire to be a leader in this area, weren't there. And this is a volunteer group whose goal is to do practical, tactical, mini projects to help retain, attract, and then grow. And grow means either through the education system or cross-function, things around generative AI. And they're really simple things that this town of all these smart people aren't doing enough of. 6 months ago, we didn't have a list of all the AI in-person events. We do now. We have 110 colleges around here. I thought we had a list of all the colleges' email addresses so we can contact students and tell them about events. We don't have that. That's being built. Turns out we didn't have an AI career fair in this town. Northeastern, one of the colleges did, but there's not one there. Now we've got that. So we find teams, volunteers, 2 to 3 people that commit to doing a project that's 30, 60, 90 days, a mini project. We have a monthly Zoom meeting that everyone's welcome to attend. It's like a mini stand-up. They report their progress here. They complete that progress, and they step back, and they feel good about that progress. And that's all small tactical projects, and there's 15 of them right now. That's in parallel to some of the things the governor's doing. So Governor Healey has a $100 million AI task force. That's an AI spending bill that's going towards a whole bunch of exciting projects on a bigger scale. And they're, this volunteer group of 850 people is a sidecar to the government's initiative.
I love that. It's great to always see the private-public partnerships together. And as we look to the future of AI in business, what major trends or developments do you think will have the biggest impact on how companies approach their AI strategies?
Well, I think we break this down a couple different ways. I think on the technology side, there's a lot coming here. I think the biggest ones will be the small models on the phone. That's going to be transformational. The whole UI going from text to voice is going to be just huge. This ability to be able to literally talk all the time and have a co-intelligence with us all the time is going to be transformational. We're going to continue to see the price cost curve come down for capabilities. That's on the technology side. I think on the capability side, the human capability side, the thing that we're seeing a lot now is that we really have to think through how we are reprioritizing core competencies. And the inquisitive mind and constant learning and not being frustrated by uncomfortableness or newness is becoming an absolute key core competency in many, many different fields now, particularly if you're in the company in the crucible here. And how do we infuse that? And there's a real question that's a debate in the company is, there actually, can I infuse that? If that has not been part of my culture here, can I actually grow that core competency, or do I need to actually replace people or redeploy people and bring in new people with that mentality? Because that's the reality of the next 10 to 15 years in business. And if you're in a hyper-competitive industry, you have to get that core competency throughout your organization here. And that's going to be a big change in terms of approaches, investment levels, and mindset in our view.
Paul, as we wrap up, I'd like to give you the opportunity to speak directly to our listeners. What's the most important thing you want them to take away from our conversation today? And what's one actionable step they can take to engage further with your work or the ideas that we've discussed?
Thank you, David. I think WEX is one of the companies you work with, and they have a phrase called embrace the pace, embrace the change. I think that's one important mentality, because Gen AI is the biggest career accelerant ever, full stop. AI is not, you've heard all this, AI is not taking a job, but someone knows how to do AI. And if you can embrace that, it only takes a little bit. That's really exciting here. And one way to do it is start figuring out tools that are relatively easy to use to show you where the world's coming. One that we like a lot is a browser extension for Chrome called chathub.gg. Chathub.gg. And this allows you, in the free version, to do 2, and the paid version, to do 6. You can ask a question, and then 6 different answers come back. So what's the best city? What's the best EV sedan to buy? And you'll see the answer from Perplexity, Chat, GPT, Gemini, Llama, Claude, and a handful of others here, all on one screen easily. And you can see that they're actually differing. So we're quickly moving from this world of Google-dominated search, the search world, to a much more fluid world where there's multiple options to go get answers. So it's answer-based world with multiple people here. And this is a really easy one to see. And to engage with us, I encourage people to come to GAIinsights.com. We have a daily email newsletter that's free. We have a learning lab every Monday night at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, that everyone's welcome to join. And that's where you get involved. And we have our annual conference, Generative AI World 2024, on October 7th and 8th here in Boston, which focuses on enterprise case studies that are in production.
I love that. And from everything you shared there, Paul, I know I spent some time on one of your daily Gen AI news briefings talking about Meta Llama 3.1. So it's great to see all the trends and knowledge that you offer to the community. To all of our listeners, Paul Beyer, the CEO of GAI Insights, thanks so much for joining us on Humane.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Humane Podcast. Did the episode measure up to your thoughts on ML and AI, data science, developer tools, and technical education? Share your thoughts with me at humanepodcast.com/contact. Remember to share this episode with a friend, subscribe and leave a review, and listen for more episodes of Humane.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.